CBC Radio 2. And now on Radio 2, the next installment in our series of Ian Fleming's James Bond stories. Damian Lewis reads the concluding part of The Property of a Lady. When a beautiful Fabergé jewel is put up for auction by an MI6 employee, it's obvious something's amiss. M sends Bond to Sotheby's to investigate. When the day of the sale arrives, Bond must discover the identity of the KGB agent behind it.
There was a line of cars and taxis blocking George Street behind Sotheby's. Bond paid off his taxi and joined the crowd filtering under the awning and up the steps. He was handed a catalogue by the uniformed commissionaire who inspected his ticket and went up the broad stairs with the fashionable, excited crowd and along a gallery and into the main auction room that was already thronged. He found his seat next to Mr. Snowman, who was writing figures on a pad on his knee, and looked round him. The lofty room was perhaps as large as a tennis court. It had the look and the smell of age, and the two large chandeliers, to fit in with the period, blazed warmly in contrast to the strip lighting along the vaulted ceiling, whose glass roof was partly obscured by a blind, still half drawn against the sun that would have been blazing down on the afternoon sale. Miscellaneous pictures and tapestries hung on the olive-green walls, and batteries of television and other cameras, amongst them the MI5 cameraman with a press pass from the Sunday Times, were clustered with their handlers on a platform. There were perhaps 100 dealers and spectators sitting attentively on small gilt chairs. All eyes were focused on the slim, good-looking auctioneer talking quietly from the raised wooden pulpit. He was dressed in an immaculate dinner jacket with a red carnation in the buttonhole. He spoke unemphatically and without gestures.
£15,000? And 16?
A pause. A glance at someone in the front row. Against you, sir? The flick of a catalogue being raised. £17,000 I am bid. £18,000, £19,000 I am bid. £20,000. And so the quiet voice went calmly, unhurriedly on, while down among the audience the equally impressive bidders signalled their responses to the litany. "What is he selling?" asked Bond, opening his catalogue. "Lot 40," said Mr. Snowman. "That diamond Riviere the porter's holding. It'll probably go for about 25. An Italian is bidding against a couple of Frenchmen. Otherwise they'd have got it for 20. I only went to 15. Like to have got it. Wonderful stones. But there it is." Sure enough, the price stuck at 25,000 and the hammer, held by its head and by its handle, came down with soft authority. "Yours, sir?" said Mr. Peter Wilson, and a sales clerk hurried down the aisle to confirm the identity of the bidder. "I'm disappointed," said Bond. Mr. Snowman looked up from his catalogue. "Why is that?" "I always thought the auctioneer banged his gavel 3 times and said, going, going, gone." Mr. Snowman laughed. "You might still find that operating in the Shires or in Ireland. Pity, it adds to the drama. You'll get plenty of that in a minute. This is the last lot before the curtain goes up." One of the porters had reverently uncoiled a glittering mass of rubies and diamonds on his black velvet tray. Bond looked at the catalogue. Lot 41. A pair of fine and important bracelets, formerly the property of Mrs. Fitzherbert, 1756 to 1837, whose marriage to the Prince of Wales, afterwards George IV, was established when a sealed packet at Coutts Bank disclosed the marriage certificate. While the bidding progressed, Bond slipped out of his seat and went down the aisle to the back of the room, where the overflow audience spread out into the entrance hall to watch the sale on closed-circuit television. He casually inspected the crowd, seeking any face he could recognise from the 200 members of the Soviet embassy staff whose photographs, clandestinely obtained, he had been studying during the past days. But amidst an audience that defied classification, dealers, amateur collectors, rich pleasure-seekers, was not a feature, let alone a face, that he could recognise except from the gossip columns. One or two sallow faces might have been Russian, but equally they might have belonged to half a dozen European races. There was a scattering of dark glasses, but dark glasses are no longer a disguise. Bond went back to his seat,
Presumably the man would have to divulge himself when the bidding began.
14,000 I am bid, and 15,000.
The hammer came down.
Yours, sir.
There was a hum of excitement and a fluttering of catalogues. Mr. Snowman wiped his forehead with a white silk handkerchief. He turned to Bond.
Now I'm afraid you are more or less on your own. I've got to pay attention to the bidding, and anyway it's considered bad form to look over one's shoulder to see who's bidding against you, so I'll only be able to spot him if he's somewhere up front here, and I'm afraid that's unlikely. Pretty well all dealers, but you can stare around as much as you like. What you've got to do is watch Wilson's eyes and try and see who he's looking at, or who's looking at him. If you can spot the man, note any movement he makes, even the very smallest. Whatever the man does, scratching his head, pulling at the lobe of his ear, or whatever, will be a code he's arranged with Wilson. I'm afraid he won't do anything obvious, like raising his catalogue. And don't forget, he may make no movement at all until right at the end, when he's pushed me as far as he thinks I'll go, then he'll want to sign off. Mark you, Snowman smiled. When we get to the last lap, I'll put plenty of heat on him and try and make him show his hand. That's assuming, of course, that we are the only two bidders left in. He looked enigmatic, and I think you can take it that we shall be.
From the man's certainty, Bond felt pretty sure that Snowman had been given instructions to get the Emerald Sphere at any cost. A sudden hush fell as a tall pedestal draped in black velvet was brought in with ceremony and positioned in front of the auctioneer's rostrum. Then a handsome oval case was placed on top of the pedestal and, with reverence, an elderly porter in grey uniform unlocked it and lifted out Lot 42. The ball of polished emerald on its exquisite base glowed with a supernatural green fire, and the jewels on its surface winked their various colours. There was a gasp of admiration from the audience, and even the clerk sitting at the tall counting-house desk beside the auctioneer, accustomed to the crown jewels of Europe parading before their eyes, leaned forward to get a better look.
James Bond turned to his catalogue. There it was in heavy type. The Terrestrial Globe, designed in 1917 by Carl Fabergé for a Russian gentleman and now the property of his granddaughter. The globe itself, the surface of which is meticulously engraved with a map of the world with the principal cities indicated by brilliant diamonds, rotates mechanically on an axis controlled by a small clock movement. After a brief and searching glance round the room, Mr. Wilson banged his hammer softly.
Lot 42, an object of virtu by Carl Fabergé.
A pause.
£20,000 I am bid.
Snowman whispered to Bond.
That means he's probably got a bid of at least 50. This is simply to get things moving.
Catalogues fluttered.
And 30, 40, £50,000 I am bid. And 60, 70, and £80,000, and 90.
A pause, and then
£100,000 I am bid.
There was a rattle of applause round the room. The cameras had swiveled to a youngish man, one of three on a raised platform to the left of the auctioneer, who was speaking softly into telephones. Snowman commented,
"That's one of Sotheby's young men. He'll be on an open line to America. I should think that's the Metropolitan bidding. Now it's time for me to get to work."
Snowman flicked up his rolled catalogue.
"And 10, said the auctioneer. The man spoke into his telephone and nodded. "And 20,
again a flick from Snowman.
"And 30.
The man on the telephone seemed to be speaking rather more words than before into his mouthpiece, perhaps giving his estimate of how much further the price was likely to go. He gave a slight shake of his head in the direction of the auctioneer.
£130,000 I am bid.
Snowman said softly to Bond, "Now you'd better watch out. America seems to have signed off. It's time for your man to start pushing me."
Bond slid out of his place and went and stood amongst a group of reporters in a corner to the left of the rostrum. Peter Wilson's eyes were directed towards the far right-hand corner of the room. Bond could detect no movement, but the auctioneer announced,
"And £40,000?
He looked down at Snowman. After a long pause, Snowman raised five fingers. Bond guessed that this was part of his process of putting the heat on. He was showing reluctance, hinting that he was near the end of his tether.
£145,000?
Again the piercing glance towards the back of the room. Again, no movement. But again, some signal had been exchanged.
£150,000.
There was a buzz of comment and some desultory clapping. This time Snowman's reaction was even slower, and the auctioneer twice repeated the last bid. Finally, he looked directly at Snowman.
"Against you, sir."
At last, Snowman raised five fingers.
£155,000.
Bond was beginning to sweat. He had got absolutely nowhere, and the bidding must surely be coming to an end. The auctioneer repeated the bid. And now there was the tiniest movement. At the back of the room, a chunky-looking man in a dark suit reached up and unobtrusively took off his dark glasses. It was a smooth, nondescript face, the sort of face that might belong to a bank manager, a member of Lloyd's, or a doctor. This must have been the prearranged code with the auctioneer. So long as the man wore his dark glasses, he would raise in tens of thousands. When he took them off, he had quit. Bond shot a quick glance towards the bank of cameramen. Yes, the MI5 photographer was on his toes. He had also seen the movement. He lifted his camera deliberately and there was the quick glare of a flash. Bond got back to his seat and whispered to Snowman.
Got him. Be in touch with you tomorrow. Thanks a lot.
Snowman only nodded. His eyes remained glued to the auctioneer. Bond slipped out of his place and walked swiftly down the aisle as the auctioneer said for the third time,
£155,000 I am bid,
and then softly brought down his hammer.
Yours, sir.
Bond got to the back of the room before the audience had risen, applauding to its feet. His quarry was hemmed in amongst the gilt chairs. He had now put on his dark glasses again, and Bond put on a pair of his own. He contrived to slip into the crowd and get behind the man as the chattering crowd streamed down the stairs. The hair grew low down on the back of the man's rather squat neck, and the lobes of his ears were pinched in close to his head. He had a slight hump, perhaps only a bone deformation, high up on his back. Bond suddenly remembered. This was Pyotr Malinovsky, with the official title on the embassy staff of agricultural attaché. So! Outside, the man began walking swiftly towards Conduit Street. Bond got unhurriedly into a taxi with its engine running and its flag down. He said to the driver, "That's him. Take it easy."
"Yes, sir,"
said the MI5 driver. The man picked up a taxi. Bond's satisfaction mounted as the taxi turned along Bayswater. It was just a question whether he would turn down the private entrance into Kensington Palace Gardens, where the first mansion on the left is the Soviet embassy. If he did, that would clinch matters. The two embassy guards had been specially picked that night. It was their job to confirm that the occupant of the taxi actually entered the Soviet embassy. Then there would be enough for the Foreign Office to declare Comrade Pyotr Malinovsky persona non grata on the grounds of espionage activity and send him packing. In the chess game that is Secret Service work, the Russians would have lost a queen. It would have been a very satisfactory visit to the auction rooms. The leading taxi did turn in through the big iron gates. Bond smiled with grim satisfaction. He leant forward. "Thanks, driver. Headquarters, please."
Part 2 of The Property of a Lady by Ian Fleming was read by Damien Lewis and produced by Joanna Green. The executive producer was Liz Anstey, and it was a Cellador production for BBC Radio 2. Next week, part 1 of For Your Eyes Only.